Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and we are continuing to cover the COVID-19 pandemic. Listen, I know people are getting annoyed with me now, but look, the Tortoise Shack relies on people to chip in. We do need it. It's difficult times out there. I get that. We've just launched Caroline West's new podcast, Glow West, and we launched Ewan McKenna's The Black Eye, two completely opposite podcasts that you couldn't imagine more divergent paths. But nonetheless, none of them have ads. None of them have sponsors. We rely on you. Patreon.com/Tortoise Shack. Martin, how are you?
Not too bad. The weather's not too bad. We're all indoors. We can survive this. Yeah, we're doing all right.
I'm cold. Look, much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined on the line by hospital consultant. He's IBD is a speciality, but he's on the front line as many other people now have been pulled in. Friend of the pod and proud Cork man, because you have to get that in every time. Anthony O'Connor. Anthony, how are you?
How are you, lads? I'm good, lads. Thanks. Yeah.
Listen, look. Can you just give us a sense when you were already working, you know, in a difficult situation even before we got here. How are things now, really?
So I suppose at the moment we're still not overwhelmed. I think that's important to note. Our ICUs still aren't full, which is great. Where I think there was something like 8 people on trolleys overnight last night. So at the moment, we're coping. The stuff that's been done sort of around opening up City West as a step-down place, that's all good. There's good work going on there. I mean, day-to-day, a lot of what I'm doing at the moment is still very much preparation, trying to make sure that our chronic patients who are on lots of medications are not running into trouble, because the last thing we need to do is be having a load of patients with chronic disease become unwell and need inpatient hospital care during this. So a big part of my day-to-day work is still doing that. It's busy. I mean, it's very, very busy. But, you know, the outpouring of support is really sustaining. And it's very moving, and I think on behalf of all the healthcare community, I'd like to thank people who are rowing in with us for sticking to the social distancing measures. I think there's huge compliance with that. Obviously, there's a few idiots, and you'll always get that, you know. But I think generally, people have really bought into it, and it helps. It really, really helps.
Are you getting enough rest? Are you getting enough downtime? Are you taking care of yourself? Are staff in general getting a bit of a rest at this stage, or are they full on?
I think, Martin, there's a temptation sometimes nearly to make work for yourself, because you kind of feel like this terrible thing is happening and you should be. And sometimes it actually is important to say, okay, well, you know, a big part of how we're all going to get through this is actually by prioritizing what matters and what's important. So in terms of rest, I suppose one thing about getting rest is when I go home from work now, anything that I would normally have been involved in sports or any sort of extracurricular activities is cancelled. I think most of the country, we've nearly completed Netflix and everything at this stage. So there's no sort of late nights up watching box sets and things like that. You just have to look after yourself.
Disney Plus are making a fortune, I'd say, at the moment.
I'd say they are. Yeah.
They couldn't have launched at a better time. I understand that you've said about the social distancing, the compliance, and we're seeing, obviously, you know, that the numbers aren't where they estimated they were going to be by, you know, Wednesday. I'm looking around to knock on wood, but you know, but nonetheless, we're also seeing things like a shortage of testing kits. We're seeing a shortage of PPE. Yeah. These are very real concerns, and you have been very good, I would say, in not, without creating a panic, but actually saying these are real things that we need to address. Have you found that there's been that it's been, you don't want to create a panic, but you also want to be honest with the public.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges about communicating in a situation like this is, out of necessity, the plan has to change every couple of days.
Yeah.
So quite understandably, for members of the public, sometimes they can say, well, we were told this on Wednesday, and now we're being told something completely different. What the hell's going on? So there was a big emphasis on the start about test, 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 test. And then we're in a situation where we're short of testing kits. I mean, they had to close some of the centres this week because of that. And when you are short of anything, you have to prioritise it towards those most in need. And I think that's it's difficult when you're changing the messaging to the public like that. But it's just kind of what we have to do. And it's almost in some respects it's hard to express, because the patient, obviously, individual patient is the most important thing. But, you know, sometimes when you're trying to explain to somebody, well, a test isn't necessarily going to change what we can do, that's a hard thing for a patient to hear, and very understandably so. And I wouldn't like to be told that I'm not able to get a test, or I don't qualify for a test or something like that. But, you know, we kind of have to keep it for people at the moment. You know, when we're short, we have to keep it for people who need it the most, who's actually going to change what we're going to do. So I suppose there's a shipment arrived in last night from China. I believe there's about another 13 or 14 coming. There's loads of work going on in labs around the world about antibody testing and things like that. So because of all that, this is very fast paced and very fast moving. Just to give a bit of context, though, today we got up to 5,000 tests done. Today the UK were posting that they got 10,000 tests done. In a much more developed health service with a huge population and huge infrastructure. So we're not doing badly on testing, but no, we're not able to meet the demands and not able to do as many as we would like. So I suppose we're just asking people to be patient and stick with it if they can.
And they did change the testing regime, rightly, to focus on those most in need and health workers, frontline healthcare workers. And we are seeing a huge attrition rate compared to other countries. Yeah. I think it's 555 now is the number at the moment. Yeah. It's very worrying. It is very worrying. What can be done there, or what efforts are being made there?
Yeah, I suppose the PPE piece is all important. And, you know, we've been promised that all this stuff's arrived from China. It started to arrive last night. Let's hope we're not going to have some of the same problems that the Netherlands had, and that the equipment's all going to be very good and very usable. And I know people are working very hard on that. So, let's wait and see what that delivers. The attrition in healthcare workers is extremely worrying. And, you know, I suppose many of us now would know somebody who's very, very unwell with this, you know, and that is sobering. I had my own sort of scare last week, and that I woke up one morning, temperature 39, feeling very unwell. So was my daughter, and, you know, my hospital took great care of me, got me tested straight away, got the results from me very, very quickly. And I was very, very pleased about that, because we've got a lab that does them on site here. And luckily, it just turned out to be common or garden standard flu for both me and my daughter, so I was able to get back to work within 2 days. But I do appreciate that that's not the same for everybody, and I was very, very lucky and appreciative to get what I got out of it. Certainly the attrition. It's not the time to be making these sort of points, but I'm going to make it anyway. We've been running an understaffed health service for a long time. When you're doing that, by necessity, the amount of patient contacts that you have are higher than they would be in comparable countries. So it doesn't, and sometimes our infrastructure facilities aren't what they could be. So it doesn't necessarily surprise me that it's spreading a lot. But we just need to. It hasn't affected morale at the front line, which is good and important. Yes. And we really, really just have to focus and keep plowing on through it.
And there is a message coming out now that if you have, if you would normally turn up in A&E, we'll say with a stroke or chest pains, that those people shouldn't hold back now. They should still go to A&E. That's really important that they do go to A&E.
It's massively important that they do. And I know some of my colleagues who work on the stroke side of things are extremely frustrated that what we've been getting in the last couple of days is late strokes, okay? So strokes where there isn't as much of an opportunity to intervene. And that's a real disaster. That can lead to long-term disability and things like that. So whereas previously, if somebody had a bit of numbness in the arm, maybe feeling a bit of difficulty word-finding, they would come to the hospital straight away after, you know, that very successful campaign a few years ago. Whereas now, obviously, people are worried. You know, they don't want to catch the thing. They don't want to burden the situation. But please come to us. We're ready. And if you're able to be discharged, we'll get you out straight away. You know, we won't keep you hanging around on this occasion waiting for loads of different tests and things like that. You know, come in, get sussed out, let's get to the bottom of it, let's get you home. There have been other examples in other fields of, let's say, diagnoses that were that I've heard about from colleagues in other countries, and other hospital diagnoses were maybe missed because everybody was focused on COVID. So it's really important to realise that, you know, there's a whole go of health problems apart from COVID that need attention as well. So please, 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 any patients listening, particularly if you're worried about heart attack or stroke or acute abdominal pain, appendicitis, any of the medical emergencies are still medical emergencies. Come, nobody's going to give out to you. And if it's possible to send you home, we'll get you home, you know.
Yeah.
I know, again, you said it wasn't, that was not the time, but you wrote a piece in January, early January, before this blew up, about when the trolley crisis was, the crisis that was facing us. And that was our normal run-of-the-mill crisis, you know, and you made the point then about the need to commandeer or part of private hospitals. Now you wake up and in the stroke of a pen, we have an additional, is it 1/6 we've increased the hospital beds by? First of all, what did you, must have been personally, you must have been delighted that you saw that the action was taken, and secondly, do you think that this is the sort of stuff, the sort of action that we need to move towards going forward?
I think it's very difficult to imagine at this remove what the world is going to look like post-COVID. I mean, we're going to be heading into a big recession. Is the same market going to be there for private healthcare as was in the past? Public healthcare is going to be delivered in a very different manner. So I'll be wary about making predictions too far into the future. I suppose when I made those arguments for nationalizing public hospitals, it was in a different context, but it was similarly, it was a crisis context all the same. Because as far as I'm concerned, 700 people on trolleys is a crisis.
Yes.
And you know, debt crisis calls for you know, radical measures, and I felt that those measures were called for then. It's been done now. It's a good thing, and I from what I'm hearing, the people in the private hospital industry were obliging and helpful, and that's great. Obviously, it's going to help keep their businesses afloat for the duration of this as well, but it's good, I guess, that people are pulling together. But certainly, yeah, I think, you know, we will have learned, you know, the administration of our country, the political class in our country will have learned an awful lot about crisis management from this. And I'll be interested to see what gets hung on to and what lessons are learned and what's put to one side. So I'm going to be optimistic for now.
Okay.
Are there pinch points that are worrying you, or pinch points where you see that there needs to be more action, such as ICU beds or residential care? Are they places where there should be a lot of focus now?
Certainly the ICU piece is massively important. There's a huge amount of work going on to up our ICU capacity, to get ventilators in, things like that, to get people trained up in how to use these things. Because having a ventilator is one thing. You know, the other thing is having a place to put the patient on the ventilator and somebody who knows how to work a ventilator to work it. So there's a huge amount of work going on. It worries me, of course, because we're stepping outside of our comfort zones. People who, you know, it's not probably not going to be possible to in a situation where ICUs are overwhelmed, to deliver the level of care that one might normally expect in an intensive care. But I know everybody is really going to try very hard. But that's the biggest worry for me. And I think, you know, I've been very consistent from the start when people talk about curves and case numbers and things like that. Let's not get, we were right not to get too fatalistic about them when they were sort of saying we're going to end up like Italy. But equally, we shouldn't be getting falsely reassured by them now, because there's a lot more of this stuff out there that we're not testing. Mm. We've got to keep focused on the process. And I kind of sound like, you know, Joe Schmidt used to always talk about the process, and Jim Gavin, the process. The process is getting people socially isolated, socially distancing themselves. The process is cocooning people. The process is upping our capacity in ICU. So let's get the process right. We can worry about case numbers and things like that, you know, when we're analysing this in 5 years' time in an academic manner. Let's get our processes right now. And I think I see evidence that people are trying very hard to do that. But obviously, you can look at what's going on in comparable countries and not be extremely worried that that might be coming to visit us. But what that should do is it should copper fasten our resolve to fall in line with the social distancing, and just that's so important.
Are you suffering from a lack of consultants, that lack of consultants that has been there for a very long time. Is that playing into this? Is it making it more difficult?
Well, I suppose if you look at the EU average for consultants, it's 2.54 per 100,000, whereas in Ireland we've got something like 1.4. Now, where that's really going to bite is we're going to be going to a situation, I suppose, in most of the big acute hospitals where consultants will be working sort of 13 hours on, 11 hours off, that sort of thing. And what that is going to mean ultimately is that there aren't going to be insufficient rest periods. And it's going to be tough. It's tough on us, tough on our families, and you know, similar shortages apply in other areas of the public service. It's not just about us, but I suppose seeing as that was the question you asked, that's where it's going to bite. And if this goes on for weeks and weeks and months, you know, we're going to be exposed to a high viral load. It's going to put us at great, I suppose, risk. And obviously, there are the other issues of how do we keep the background health service running at the same time? How do we keep rested enough to make decisions? And that is basically what being a consultant's about. It's being the decision maker and knowing when to make the decision. And you've got that's one area where I have felt overwhelmed at some point over the last week or two is the volume of decisions coming at you day by day. And it's important that to get rest. So that's going to bite. But we're just going to have to try our best.
And viral load is important. I think back to that Chernobyl series that was on when they had to move the hugely radioactive pieces off the roof, and they only sent guys in for a couple of seconds so that they weren't exposed. And you kind of have to be in that mindset too as a first line healthcare worker, that you have to reduce your exposure all the time.
And it's worth that in some respects, because if you look at those guys, they were very used to working in a sort of a regimented environment where the boss tells you what to do, whereas in my a lot of us doctors, we prefer to be cowboys rather than pit crews, in that we're guys, you want to be the fella riding into town on the white horse about to save the day, like Gary Cooper in High Noon. That's a notion I sort of disabused to myself of a few years ago. I can't do that on my own. I'd much rather be part of a pit crew, a team that work properly. But it's going to require a culture shift. But I think it will happen out of necessity. It will be bumpy along the way, but I think it'll happen. I think people are ready to step up. The problem will be if we lose maybe 30% to 30% of our consultants at the peak of the outbreak to COVID, then you're very tight. How do you deal with that? But look, you know, as I said, if as I've been saying to my juniors and colleagues all week, I shouldn't call them my juniors. They're people who work with me rather than work for me. But like what I've been saying to them all week is, if you're in medicine and you don't want to tog off at a time like this, then you're definitely in the wrong business. Like this is a real opportunity to make a difference on behalf of everyone, on behalf of the country. You know.
I just want to be clear to when you said your juniors, he doesn't refer to people he works with. Anybody who's not from Cork is effectively his junior.
That's junior. Juniors are people younger than me.
He smells like Cork period. Subordinate. I had to get that in. Anthony, look, I suppose we won't delay you anymore. We know you're right there. But
keep up the good work. You're doing a great job there. Some of the pods have been absolutely fantastic.
And you have been doing, and you guys are doing a great job. I really appreciate it. I really appreciate the time and the work you guys do, and continue to speak out as well, because we're delighted to hear people calling for leadership, calling for action, and calling for that. You have our full support for, and we, you know,
thanks,
listen to talk to you soon. Okay.
And just one last message. If you are getting those heart attacks, strokes, acute abdominal pain, acute limb pain, come to hospital. We'll worry about the COVID later. Okay. Any emergency symptoms, please come to hospital.
And I just want to say, you look 20 years younger without the beard. 20 years younger.
Yeah. Well, I also looking at Tony there, he's going to have a great mullet by the time this is over.
I might myself.
Listen, folks, I hope you enjoyed that. Listen to the doctors. One last plea, if you could, please head over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. We need all the support we can get to try keep these podcasts coming. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.